copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I guess it would be only fair to tell you a little bit about myself. I'm Ioana Bauer. Right now I am based in Romania, in Bucharest. My little tag thing says Eliberare, which is the organization that I am the president of the board. But since March, I'm serving in the office of the prime minister here in Romania as a policy advisor on human trafficking. I've been working in this issue officially since 2012, but my heart was captured by it even before. So I've worked in various places, from the US to different Western or destination countries, Western European countries, and also in source countries. Romania, for example, is one of the main source countries when it comes to human trafficking in Europe. My background is both in aftercare as well as prevention, capacity building, and obviously policy now. So what I'm going to try to do is present some of the facts, just because some of us maybe need to, I don't know, visit some concepts and make sure that we're all on the same position. And then we're going to discuss a little bit, since we've already heard this mentioned, what does a Christian perspective look like when it comes to human trafficking, and what is our role in that as believers? So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. I pray that this is going to be useful for all of us, and that we'll be also able to learn from each other. And I'll get going. Just because as soon as I share my screen, I'm not going to be able to see you all very well. If there are things, please put them in the chat, and I'm going to try to also stay focused on what's going on over there. As I mentioned, Eliberare is the NGO that I serve as president of the board currently. We're working in preventing human trafficking and sexual exploitation since 2013. Over the these years, our work has looked very differently from awareness campaigns, both online and offline, capacity building from official stakeholders, so working with, for example, police or prosecutors, social workers, people who you would normally think that they have a direct involvement in this, to what we call non-traditional actors, whether it's faith community leaders. So for example, in Romania, the Orthodox Church, which has a huge spread, or beauticians, because it turns out that human trafficking victims still visit either hair salons or beauty salons while they're in exploitation. All these people who we call non-traditional partners or non-traditional actors, we've trained them to detect and notify cases of human trafficking. We also work in something that's called external assistance, meaning that we do not have a shelter that we run as an NGO, but what we do is we come alongside already existing shelters. With Romania being one of the main source countries of victims of human trafficking in Europe, there was this interesting thing where most shelters were not running at full capacity. So instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, we started asking the question of how can we add value to the work that was already being done? Where is God already at work, and how can we join and be a blessing? So we run either mentoring programs or different job skill, life skills training programs with shelters in all across Romania. And then we also have this component of policy. So in Romania, lobbying is actually illegal. All of our work to influence public policy, both at a national, European and international level, is done through advocacy. What we normally do is we identify a need, we create a resource for it, we try to pilot a project and see if it works. And then if it works, what we try to do is scale it first nationally, and then try to see if the solution would also work in other regions. And just because of my official position, I do have to say that right now I'm not speaking in the name of the Romanian government, but as an activist and a firm believer that Christians can have an impact in this area as well. So why are we talking about this? Why is human trafficking such a huge issue? Mainly because the price is right. I don't know how many of you know or remember this show called The Price is Right, where you basically would look at different objects and you would have to kind of anticipate their price. And depending on how close you were to that price, you would end up winning that object. So we do this in schools. Our educational program has reached around 700,000 students in the 8 years that we've ran it. And kids were really into this. So we would show them different objects, some of them pictured right here. So really expensive cars, expensive phones, books or makeup. And then we would show them a person. And then usually what happens is that everybody goes silent because you either have the jokesters, right? Especially if we talk about high school, or you have the ones who are blocked because usually one of them mentions that a human has no price. A human should not be sold. And yet this is what happens, right? And the global price for a human being currently is around 70 euros because the global market or the global prices are taken down a lot due to the prices that are being practiced in Asia. So this is what we're going to be talking about. Human trafficking actually is modern day slavery, where people profit from the control and the exploitation of others. And it takes different forms. But back to the official definition, there needs to be three specific things for human trafficking to be present, right? The act. And here it's really important to talk about the fact that recruitment, transportation, transferring, harboring, or housing a person is also punishable under international law. The means, right? And the means used to be way more violent before. So threats of violence, abduction. We have obviously all seen Taken and how there's a white van that's just kidnapping people. Well, right now, the means are way more subtle. And we'll talk about recruitment forms. But coercion is very much something that's being used. Also, abuse of power or abuse of vulnerability, giving payment or benefits. For example, there are countries in which you already mentioned that prostitution is legal, and there is this debate whether a person who is already in prostitution can be a victim of human trafficking as well. And then the purpose is always exploitation. So whether we're talking about forced prostitution, sexual exploitation, forced labor, slavery-like practices, forced begging. These are all forms of exploitation and of human trafficking. One thing that needs to be mentioned is that the means is not important when we talk about children. So the means are no longer in discussion when we're talking about a person who is underage. Now, to go a bit more into what human trafficking looks like, and by the way, we're discussing this whole idea of an identity of a person. We shy away from calling people prostitutes because that speaks to their identity. We talk more about people who are in prostitution because that describes the situation in which they're in. Obviously, if we are to think about the intrinsic value of someone and the fact that we're all made in God's image and likeness, I really doubt that if we are to look into the reason why people choose, quote unquote, to go into prostitution, you would find a lot of young girls who say, okay, I want to grow up and be a prostitute. I think the constraint is usually there. And that is actually a model that's very, very well known as the Swedish model. It's automatically, we don't assume that somebody chooses to be in prostitution because it's a profession that they think they like. So with sexual exploitation, the most common form is forced prostitution. We also have escort services. So these may be even working as legal businesses. So you have these businesses that function and they don't say that they're actually human trafficking hubs. And then we also have, especially in Romania, a huge industry of video chat. With the pandemic, a lot of the exploitation has moved online. This is something that we saw all across Europe, especially we saw a huge rise in online sexual exploitation of children. The camera symbol is also there because when we talk about human trafficking and sexual exploitation, we also talk about victims who are forced to produce pornographic material. So there was a study done in 9 countries where 45 of the victims of human trafficking that were interviewed, they were also forced to produce pornography. So when it comes to that subject and the intersection between the two. Now, when it comes to forced labor, there are specific domains in which forced labor is more common. So, for example, agriculture, the forestry industry, since we had some example of people being exploited in forced labor. We have the garment industry, everything that has to do with manufacturing, whether we're talking about textiles or other types of factories. We also see a huge rise in exploitation when it comes to car washes or other businesses that have to do with manual labor. And then we also talk about domestic servitude. So domestic servitude it takes place in private homes. It's usually much harder to detect as well as to notify or refer to, because a lot of countries do not have a clear legal framework when it comes to workers who work within the homes of people. So whether we're talking about au pairs, live-in nannies, maids, cleaning personnel, these are all forms of domestic servitude that could be found. Other forms of exploitation include forced begging. And I'm sure that if you've went out in any big European city, we've seen a lot of people who are begging, especially kids or people who have different disabilities. People are sometimes maimed in order to create more compassion so that people give more money. Another form of human trafficking is organ trafficking. So everything that has to do with human DNA falls into human trafficking. And then there's people who are being forced to commit crimes, whether we talk about violent crimes, whether we talk about stealing, or whether we talk about people who are being forced to commit fraud. These are folks who are usually promised decent jobs, legal jobs, but who, when they reach their destination of their so-called job opportunity, they're being forced to repay a debt that is way bigger than what they can afford. And then they're being told, okay, you need to go and steal from the ATM, or you need to start running bank frauds. The problem with this type of human trafficking is that people are very, very apprehensive about going to the police and asking for help, because in their mind, they've committed a crime, which is true. So traffickers actually convince them that they are in a position in which they're going to be prosecuted, not protected. So this is a form of human trafficking that a lot of times goes extremely underreported. Human trafficking is not an isolated phenomenon. It actually happens everywhere, whether we talk about the so-called rich countries, countries of destination, the countries that have a lot of pull factors, right? The attractive jobs or more money or a better opportunity for a better life. Or whether we talk about poor countries, countries that are normally looked at as countries that source victims of human trafficking and that have a lot of factors that push people away. Whether we talk about poverty, lack of rule of law, lack of opportunities, all these things are actually factors that push people away. So in Asia, we talk a lot about sexual exploitation. Again, a huge rise in online sexual exploitation of children. Asia used to be the place where this type of material was being created. Right now, it has also migrated to Europe because of the COVID crisis, but Asia is still one of those places where this is a huge problem. So streaming of abuse, of sexual abuse of children. In Africa, we also talk about child soldiers. We talk a lot about children who are being and also sexual exploitation. We should not look away and shy away from the fact that a lot of people who come from Africa end up being exploited in commercial sexual exploitation in Europe. Again, the fact that their status when it comes to protection of the law in Europe because of their status of as third country nationals is unclear, these people become even more vulnerable when it comes to that. Human trafficking happens in the United States as well. For those of you who are familiar with the subject, you know that the Department of State each year releases a report where they grade each country based on their efforts that they're making when it comes to combating human trafficking. It was a huge success when America started rating itself and actually admitted that this is an issue there as well. So sexual exploitation, especially of runaway teenagers, is a huge issue. And obviously we have a lot of people who are being exploited through forced labor. There's actually a debate internationally of whether very strict visa and border regulations make people more vulnerable to this or not. And here, obviously, we do not have time, but it would be an interesting case study to talk about the people who are stuck at the border and in different camps. And then Europe, we're going to be talking about the statistics more precisely when it comes to Europe. But Europe is in this, it's almost divided between Eastern and Western. And sometimes this is a fake dichotomy where we think that people from Central or Eastern Europe end up being trafficked in Western Europe. I think this is a paradigm that we need to receive carefully because that was usually the case. But right now what's happening, for example, in countries like Romania or Bulgaria is that we have a flood of refugees or asylum seekers that are coming from the Middle East or Africa, and we are becoming destination countries. So this line between source and destination country is very fine. And sometimes we may think that the only things that we need to do in our specific country or in our specific situation is that we need to do prevention, for example, or education, when actually we should be ready to offer services and we should be able to do better at detecting human trafficking victims that are from a different nationality. So the situation right now, as given by the Global Slavery Index, the latest one is the one from 2018, is that about 40.3 million people are living in slavery right now. So that is more proportionally than when the Atlantic slave trade was legal. Also, the price of a person has gone down significantly. Back then, we were talking about a few thousand of dollars. And right now, we saw that the median price of a slave has gone down to less than 100 euros. Just to put things into perspective, because this is a huge number, if you were to think of countries such as Romania, so the population of Romania, the population of Bolivia, the population of Latvia, and the population of Hong Kong, if I'm not mistaken, these would all add up as the amount of people who are right now living in a form of exploitation or another, which is huge. When it comes to forms of trafficking in the EU, we see that the majority of people who are being identified, because we're talking just about the people who are identified, right? They're in sexual exploitation. Then you have forced labor at 15%. Other forms, so if you remember forced begging, people who are forced to commit illegal activities, organ trafficking, and so on, amount to 18%. And then 7% of the people identified in Eurostat in 2021 are actually in an unknown form of slavery. I think another thing that we need to talk when we look at these statistics is that with statistics, first of all, we still strongly believe that human trafficking is severely underreported, either because of misconception, myths, inability of victims to actually identify themselves as victims, our preconceived ideas of what does someone who's in exploitation look like. So these help us kind of direct where our programs should go and kind of give us an understanding of what is going on around us. But by no means are these exact, and do they show the whole picture. In a lot of countries, there's still, especially European countries, there's still a legislative void when it comes to online exploitation. We still don't have clear boundaries when it comes to who is the trafficker, who should be prosecuted, what country are we talking about, because the streaming could be happening in one country, so the victims are located in one country and the perpetrators are in another. So this is just to say that the statistics should always be taken with a pinch of salt or a grain of salt. Now, what does a trafficker look like? He's this like really weird guy, right? Wearing a leather jacket, someone that you would normally not necessarily trust. He would raise some eyebrows, right? Well, it turns out that that's actually not the case, right? Instead of focusing on how does this person look like, it's better to look and see that traffickers can be male or female. They can be young or old. For example, there are cases in which there are grandmothers who are recruiting other mothers in parks. So their kids play together and there's this nice little old lady who's actually trying to recruit someone for them to then be exploited. There are a few characteristics though by which we can spot these people. So usually a trafficker is creative. They sell dreams, the dream of a better life, right? So if you're this poor young boy who has absolutely no chance to make it in his village, the trafficker is going to be the guy who offers you a really well-paying job and who usually drives a black BMW and who's going to tell you, hey, if you want to have the same car, like I'll hook you up because I know someone. If you're a girl who is never told by her parents that you have worth, that you're precious, or maybe you do not have parents, or maybe you come from a situation of chronic abuse, the trafficker is going to be the guy who sells you the dream of having a happy and loving relationship. So we also call this the lover boy technique. Another thing, traffickers move really fast. So the offer stands only for a limited amount of time, whether we talk about a job. So, hey, do you want to come work in Spain? Okay, where in Spain? In Madrid. Okay, but Madrid is really big. Do you want to go or not? Like, they're not going to give you specific details. You're probably not going to be able to pinpoint where the location of this wonderful job is. And if you're not going to go for the opportunity, there's 10 more like you who are going to accept it. So this whole thing moves really, really fast. In the beginning, they offer even gifts, right? Especially with the lover boy technique. There's people who are in a relationship with their victim for even years in which they are the absolutely perfect boyfriend. They offer for gifts. They lavish them with different experiences and so on. And all of a sudden, something happens. The business doesn't work anymore. The grandma died. So then the proposition comes. Hey, do you want to go to Germany so we can both work? And as soon as we put ourselves back together, we're just going to save money and then we're going to get married and come back and so on. So the dream of a better life continues. It's just that the way that the person ends up accepting even going into exploitative situation is given by this trust that was built for a very long time. Now, that love is conditional, because as long as you do what you're supposed to be doing, then you may be able to keep some of the money that you're making. You may be able to even, you know, be taken out. There's this whole, the punishment is very well balanced with small rewards. And obviously, that's why we also talk about the Stockholm syndrome, right? And the problem of victims to actually realize that they are victims and that they are in an exploitative situation. Then the threats come, and the threats aren't necessarily on the victim directly. A lot of times the threats have to do with the victim's extended family. So if you think about, for example, men who are being exploited through forced labor, they're told, okay, so if you escape, that's fine. You may be able to escape, but we're going to go after your wife and your kids at home. Or if there's a young woman who's being in sexual exploitation, it's the same story. So, okay, you may be able to escape, but we'll go back and date your little sister. And ultimately, a trafficker desires control. So it's about the control of the movement of the person, the way that they spend their time, the people that they see. That is the ultimate goal. Now, some of the main recruitment forms, and these vary from country to country. It could be jobs that seem too good to be true. So the job that is that pays a lot, for which you don't need any experience, you don't need to know anything, you just need to be open to flexibility and be able to leave tomorrow. They even promise your bonus if you bring a friend, right? Or it could be recruitment through the internet, and this is growing more and more. So it's online platforms. Don't think about the dark web. There is actually recruitment groups that are happening on WhatsApp or on TikTok. So this is very much hidden in plain sight. We also talk about the recruitment form of the lover boy, which I already mentioned. There's a rise in cases of forced marriages. So people actually end up marrying their exploiter, or they marry someone for either visa fraud or for people to be able to enter in the European Union. Recruitment forms also include offers for health. So especially when it comes to organ trafficking, what we have seen is that the vulnerability of a person, whether they're homeless or in a very precarious situation, they come from underserved communities, they're being convinced that they have a huge medical problem. And then this person comes and poses as the savior. They say, hey, you are very sick, but I'm willing to pay for your medication to get better. We're going to pay for your treatment to go in another country. And then actually what ends up happening is that their organs are being harvested illegally and used in illegal transplants. Offers to study abroad. These are also different forms of recruitment, but the most common one, or the most common ones, remain the lover boy method and the legitimate job. So people actually think that they're going to be working in a legitimate legal place. Everyone can be a human trafficking victim. This is one of the statements that always raises eyebrows. What do we mean by this? It's really important not to have preconceived ideas about how a victim of human trafficking looks like. Because all of a sudden, if we only imagine chains, people who are beaten up, bruises, all these things, you're already really limiting your possibility to actually identify someone who is in exploitation. As I already mentioned, a lot of times these people are hidden in plain sight. Mark was saying that we have people, or he sees people who are always different, but in the same location, who seem to be in prostitution, right? Those people don't have chains. They don't necessarily seem to be there forced. But what we don't see is the invisible chains, whether it's the threats to the family, or it's the idea that, you know, nobody's going to believe you. If you go to the police, they're just going to think that you are a whore and they're not going to listen to you. Or nobody's going to love you after this because you're absolutely soiled. Your family's not gonna take you back. So just because somebody doesn't look like what we think a victim should look like, it does not mean that they're not in a situation of exploitation. Why does human trafficking happen? Well, human trafficking still happens because it's a low risk, high reward crime. The OSCE report that just came out shows that for every 2,200 victims, there's only one human trafficker prosecuted. Unless we tip this scale and unless we make this business much, much riskier, then this is going to continue to happen. Because on the other end, you have the estimation that 14 billion euros are being made out of just sexual exploitation in one single year, right? So this has to tip somehow, because otherwise we're just going to have the situation happen over and over again. Now, human trafficking starts with the dream of a better life. So with this, whenever we talk about the issue and whenever we run educational programs, what we don't want to do is we don't want to tell people who are vulnerable that, you know, if you fall in love, a lover boy is going to get you and you're going to end up trafficking. If you take a job abroad that offers to pay a lot of money, it's probably fake and you're going to get trafficked, right? You don't want to crush people's dreams. What you want to do is make sure that you encourage them to pursue these dreams with discernment and with some tools where they're able to figure out if the situation that they're in is a situation of risk or not. Now, I'm going to finish this in 3 minutes, but what is the calling of the church? So I already mentioned that the church is not called to rescue, because a lot of times when it comes to Christian circles, the way that we talk about this is very much we are called to rescue, we are called to go in and save, and that is not true. Like, Jesus is the only savior. The way that we go in has to be with a lot of respect. It has to be with a lot of discernment. It has to be with a lot of delicacy, because usually what ends up happening, we go in with from a perspective of we already know it all, we have the solution, we're going to pray for you, you're going to be delivered, and everything is going to be fine, right? So what are some things that we can do in order to ensure that we don't do more harm than good? So one of the things, obviously, is to pray. And here, pray for the victims, but also pray for the traffickers and pray for the people who are okay with paying for the services of these victims, right? Pray for the people who work in this, people who are running shelters, people who are running organizations, people who are in decision-making positions to where they agree to actually tackle this from a different level. Then another thing that we can do is to prevent. So what do I mean by preventing? As Christians, we run a lot of programs and we do a lot of the background work when it comes to reducing vulnerabilities. So, for example, if you run an after school for children in underprivileged communities and you teach them how to read, that is prevention, because you're making them less susceptible to promises and to offers from traffickers. If you are working in a soup kitchen and making sure that single moms are actually able to pass a difficult time, like, this is prevention work. You don't necessarily have to mention human trafficking as long as you're working on decreasing vulnerabilities. This is a huge step forward. We're also called to protect. And this is not just a matter of opening centers and putting people in centers and protecting them there, but it's something that has to do with the way that we talk about these people, the way that we affirm their decency and their human value. We're also called to persevere. This is not easy work. Richard was already mentioning that he's also investing money in this, but this is something that we need to keep in mind, that we need to move on. And every time that people maybe get bored with the subject, we need to make sure that we persevere. And then we need to make sure that we proclaim value. Nobody's too gone or too far to be reached. God bless you.